So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
Listen to review,
right now, right? That's what you say. We get it by now.
The World Wrestling Federation. For over 50 years, the revolutionary force in sports entertainment.
Last night at WrestleMania 12, a record-breaking crowd experienced the most spectacular. The most provocative. The most brutal. And the most outrageous event in World Wrestling Federation history.
We felt the exhilaration after all the anticipation with the awesome return of the Ultimate Sensation.
And we witnessed the conquest by the phenomenal force over a black-gloved monster.
And we shared in the ecstasy and the agony of the fulfillment of a lifelong dream.
Welcome to Review Away. I am John Pollock with the green hat assassin, Wei Ting.
It is me.
How are you doing, Wei?
Doing good. How are you? This is a big day for you.
Thank you. I would not want to spend it with anyone other than you.
It is John Pollock's 32nd birthday.
It is. It is my 32nd anniversary.
Yep.
It's John Pollock Mania 32.
John Pollock Star.
John Pollock's star, yep. The biggest birthday in history. Mm-hmm. I've gotten over 100,000 people that have wished me a happy birthday, when realistically, it hasn't been the strongest couple of weeks leading up to it, and the actual number is significantly less.
Yeah.
But I'm the only one who gets to announce it, so I can say whatever number I want.
Yeah. For some reason, you've been complaining a lot about Shane McMahon appearing at your birthday. But
I invited him.
But people are excited.
I wonder if he'll wish me a happy birthday today. He has throughout the rest of the day. You know who wished me a happy birthday one year?
Who's that?
Dixie Carter wished me a happy birthday one year.
Oh.
It was
how did she know? Are you Facebook friends?
Maybe.
Wow.
Maybe. I can't even remember, to be honest.
And do you think it was like an automatic thing? Or she doesn't message happy birthday to anybody.
I have no idea. But if it was her, if it was someone that works with her... Mm-hmm. It was a very nice gesture on her part. So,
did it change your opinion of TNA that week?
This was years ago. Mm-hmm. So I would say no. I don't think that should necessarily sway someone's opinion. Okay. What is your thought, Wei, on being... If you were to get a phone call tomorrow from... Who's someone that drives you nuts that you don't... If Sheamus called you up tomorrow and said, "Hey, fella, happy birthday." And said, big fan of yours, would love to roll with you sometime, and fucking Connor, that was a tough loss. And you guys became buds. Would you have a harder time saying that this guy had a pretty awful run as champion, he's not a great promo? Would that affect your opinion?
I don't think so. Internally, no. But I would be nicer about it on air.
Is that right?
Yeah, I wouldn't be as kind of.
I mean that in the sense like, I don't.
If I had a personal relationship with somebody, I mean, I
don't want to have any friends.
Yeah, I don't really either. But what I mean is,
imagine I, let's say I don't know, I got arrested for, I'm trying to make it a parallel. Let's say you had to do something where you're commenting on me.
Yeah.
Because I've done something awful.
Okay.
And you're my friend.
Yeah.
But you're also somebody whose opinion people trust.
Yeah.
And you, it's not exactly.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. If I had to kind of.
Let's say I was a wrestler and I just had the worst match you've ever seen. But you and I are best friends.
Yeah.
Would you be less lenient towards me?
I think I would. Even though I would like to say that I wouldn't. But I would probably... it's not like I would make excuses for you. I'd say if the match was bad, I'd probably tell you because you probably know. But I would want you to call me out on it.
But yeah. I probably would have thin skin towards you internally. I'd internalize it.
But I also wouldn't, you know, go out of my way to put you down. Not that I do that with other people. But sometimes, like, it's funny to, like, talk shit about somebody and to kind of exaggerate a little. Maybe I would still do that with you.
I think that we have a pretty good line when it comes to talking about performances versus the people. I mean, granted, in wrestling and MMA, there are just some bad people that are going to populate industries. However, I think for the majority, like, okay, Shane McMahon, I am never going to comment on this guy as a person. I don't know this person. He's from every account of everybody I've spoken to, he is a super guy to be around. Lots of people enjoy him. Lots of people are fans of this guy. I cannot just erase all of that from my own belief.
Yeah.
That I'm not a fan of this match and direction, which I've gotten some amazing feel. I think this has become my, like, this match people have just taken as this is my hill I'm going to die on. How dare this match occur at WrestleMania?
This is your identity.
This is it.
Oh, John Pollock, the guy who does.
Oh, like the Shane McMahon guy. I think this is going to be my peak moment. This is going to be my Nate Diaz moment of submitting Conor McGregor.
Your grandchildren.
My rant about Shane McMahon facing The Undertaker at WrestleMania. What stupid stuff we talk about.
Yeah.
Like, what a weird career we have. Like, let's talk about the advancements in modern medicine.
This is stupid.
No, I'm not
done.
Saying...
I'm done with this.
No,
I'm done talking about professional
stupid wrestling. Was a... I use words for effect. Have you noticed that?
It is quite ridiculous what we're doing here. Talking about...
Is it any more ridiculous, wrestling? Though, than anything else?
Yeah.
I mean, if we were doing a show about... we reviewed television shows. I don't think anyone...
This is a bit more ridiculous.
Wrestling?
Yeah.
Why?
Well, wrestling itself is...
It's not something you're supposed to take seriously.
Wrestling itself is just sort of very weird and strange and bizarre. But that's why I think we're fans of it. It's also, I'd say, more niche than, you know, maybe a lot of TV shows, but then again, maybe not.
See, I imagine when you go hang out with your high school friends and they're asking you about your work and stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, you can explain that, oh, I'm a cameraman, I'm an editor, I work at a television station. That all sounds normal.
Mm-hmm.
Me. Oh, I cover pro wrestling. Like, what do you mean? Like, talk about it? Like, real? Do you know how many times? I swear now, when people ask me what I do, I just try and keep it as vague as possible.
What do you say?
I'm a host. I don't even want to say television station, because that always leads to more questions.
Yeah. So what do you say? You're just like a host?
Let's
pretend you're meeting me for the first time at a
Sure,
party.
Sure. I wouldn't talk to you, first of all, if I didn't know you. I would not be the one to come randomly talk to you.
Let's say somebody is introducing us, and you're like, oh, hey, what's up? How's it going? Hey, nice to meet you. My name's Wei. What's yours?
I'm John.
Nice. Cool.
Do you want me to be as realistic as possible in this conversation? Okay, you've trapped me. Already, I want out of this conversation.
Yeah.
I
don't want to be here either, but I think...
But you approached me.
We're the only people at the party, and our friend...
We're at a party now.
Yeah. Our friend has to make drinks.
Okay, we're at a party. I can understand that. Maybe I'm more open to talking to you in a party setting than... I just thought I'm at a coffee shop, and you're randomly coming up and talking to me.
Why would I do that?
I would just want out so badly.
No, we both arrived way too early, and so...
Right. Always a bad mistake.
Yeah. So what do you do, John?
I work at a television station. Way.
Oh, what TV channel? Like CBC?
Would I also be scoring points on the fact that I have not made some stupid joke about your name by this point? Way what?
I don't know. I don't get it that offended anymore.
I feel guilt now for all the years.
It's fine.
I would hate me if I was you at that point.
Mm.
When I hear people now make jokes about your name, it drives me insane.
Well, I mean, I think I prefer somebody actually make a joke than to just kind of make a joke inside their head and not say it. Because I know they're probably going to do that anyway.
Okay. Back to our conversation. I work at a television station.
Oh, what TV channel, John?
It's called The Fight Network. Oh. Which is usually my description is like boxing, MMA, and anything involving people in combat. I usually exclude wrestling because that just opens up the door for a conversation I probably don't want to have.
Yeah, okay. So,
but let's do it. Let's do it. And pro wrestling. Pro wrestling. Not amateur wrestling. Pro wrestling, because that's always the qualifier that someone wants to know.
What is that, like WWF? Like that stuff?
That's always the response, too. Yes, like WWE. I should say no, like Ring of Honor.
Oh, like the stuff that like kids watch?
Like Rev Pro. Yes. Wow.
Wait, do people watch that stuff?
No, no, nobody watches that. You are surprisingly good at this, because this is all like stock questions that you'll get when you go down the dreaded pro wrestling path.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know adults watch that stuff. Still,
you know what it'll actually usually go to? It goes around to, oh man, I used to be into that, but too much talking. it's just not real. It's so predictable.
Yeah, it's fake, right?
But now we're into a topic that they certainly want to explore, and then all of a sudden it's like all of this preamble of, oh, I stopped years ago, I watched it when I was a kid bullshit.
Nobody really wants to talk about boxing, that's for sure. Sometimes you'll come across a UFC or a Ronda Rousey fan who wants to talk about that, but typically it's the WWE, it's the pro wrestling
stuff. It's the most
talk about.
It's interesting because they probably never get to talk about it much with somebody else. So then after all this disclaimer of, oh, I don't watch this crap, it becomes So Shane McMahon's really coming back to face The Undertaker? I mean, why not, you know, Kevin Owens or something? And then it's like, suddenly, it's like, oh, you're very aware of this, aren't you? I can't tell you the amount of times that happens. Really? Where it's like, you are very much on top of this and follow wrestling to a level that you are not comfortable to disclose. And now I'm sucked into your conversation because you thumb your nose at this, but you very much want to continue with this discussion.
Evidently hit a button too.
Like why can't just someone? Yeah, I watched that too. That's great.
They probably don't watch it.
I'm sure they follow. There's a difference between watching and following.
I think it's very prevalent on social media still. You know, anytime a big WWE event happens, I mean, for obviously because we follow a lot of fellow pro wrestling fans, it's gonna kind of swarm our Facebook feeds. But I feel like even you know it really permeates pop culture. Whenever WrestleMania comes around, or I'm sure like when Shane McMahon showed up, I'm sure even people who aren't wrestling fans probably heard about it via Twitter.
Monday's announcement.
Huge.
That was news that, yeah. I mean, a lot of people, I'm sure the guy at the party heard about it.
Yeah. I'm kind of sick of talking about it though.
We exhausted it on Monday. We don't have to rehash. I mean, people are listening to a new show.
Yeah.
They want to hear about stuff from 20 years ago, not 2 days ago. Mm-hmm. Well, that's fun. I want you next time. I want you to get into a random conversation over the next week with somebody about pro wrestling and report back to us.
I'm sure that'll happen.
You're much more the random conversationalist of the two of us. Let's be honest here. I'm probably not that person that's going to just go randomly talk to anybody. But you will. You get an enjoyment out of it.
No, I don't.
Yeah, you do. You'll go to different people and just talk.
I don't do that.
Yeah, you are. You're very much a talker.
No. Wow. Not really.
But you and I are the exact opposite when there are not microphones here.
That's not, I mean, kind of true, maybe not true. But I think that
when
somebody engages you, You get into talking mode. You get into talking, John. You know.
Are you saying then I can't shut up?
Kind of.
Oh wow.
Anyway, but I think it just like you might not be like incredibly you won't be approaching people, and you might even seem like somebody who's not that approachable. But I think once somebody does approach you and engages you in conversation, you become a very talkative person.
Yeah. Well, that's a. Interesting. I'd agree with that. I would agree with that assessment. Are you ready to talk? I now have this this inner guilt now that you feel I'm just going to blab and blab for the rest of the show.
I'm kidding. No, of course you.
I'm very hurt.
I want you to be talkative.
Now, today's my birthday.
Yeah.
Your birthday falls on a Monday this year.
Yeah, another broadcast.
Next Monday night.
Mm-hmm.
Do you want to do the show on Monday? Are you willing?
Oh,
to...
you give me the day off?
No, I'm not. But I'm giving you. I'm appearing to give you the option.
No,
here. Are you? What I'm asking is, are you not looking forward to having to spend your birthday evening watching Raw?
I don't mind. I mean, my birthday evening is just whatever. I don't care that much either way. I mean, I'm going to celebrate it probably that weekend, and at other times I don't have to celebrate it on the day. What am I, like, 5 year old? Got to celebrate it on the day.
What would you do on a Monday night?
Probably nothing.
Yeah,
that's what I probably mean, watch Raw.
You know what I'm doing tonight? Watch I'm having dinner with my wife, and I'm ordering Swish LA.
Wow, is that a tradition?
No, I enjoy Swish LA. My wife hates it, but it's my birthday, so I get to pick.
You get to eat whatever you want. You get to stuff it.
You know where I went on last Friday night? It was my wife took me out for dinner for my birthday, so I got two dinners out of this. We went to this rib place in the city. Mm-hmm. It's called Big Crow.
I've been.
You've been there?
Yeah, it's isn't it like hidden inside?
Yes,
yeah,
yes, it's very hidden. It's kind of hard to find if you don't know where you're going.
I went recently.
Oh, okay. What did you think? Because I went there for my birthday last year. I loved it, and that's why I wanted to go back again this year.
Yeah.
And this time around,
it's good.
My memories have it built it so much more in my head that it wasn't. I don't think it lived up to my expectation, but still good. Still ribs. You know what I mean?
Good. Yeah. The atmosphere is really nice. It's kind of like in the back and hidden.
I like the atmosphere a lot. It's like this wood cabin kind of thing where you're at these tables.
But it didn't leave a great, a lasting impression. I mean, the Piston is still at the top.
Piston is number one for me. I love the Piston. We haven't gone in quite some time, so I think it's about time get pissed off. Bad combination.
Oh, man.
What did you get at Big Crow when you went? Do you recall?
I had a bit of everything, but I. This is come on.
You know what? Wait, this is our show. This is our show.
No.
People can delete this in a second. They have no investment
really
beyond their time. So if they don't like this.
Yeah, but I think it's very selfish that we're talking about this.
Should we start time stamping when the review starts?
I mean, I don't. I kind of do that for the YouTube reviews. So it's up to you.
I've started doing that for the MMA report because I feel...
Why? Do you do this preamble during the MMA report?
I always talk about ribs to myself on the MMA report as Wei just conveniently reveals that he never listens
to
the MMA report.
Actually, I'm a co-host on the MMA report. I just sit here and I don't talk.
You're welcome to come on anytime.
Well, thank you. Anyway,
to be honest, of all the they talk too much, I don't get any more complaints about our pre-chat, which may open the floodgates now, but... None.
I just don't know how relatable this rib conversation is for a local place that I don't know how many of our listeners will ever get the chance to go to.
Yeah, well, they can. They can come. The option is there. How many times do you get the question, I'm coming to Toronto, what are some good places to do? I must get a handful of those every month.
Yeah.
Here is a big advertisement. Big Crow, take your chances.
Okay.
It's good.
Yeah, it's
but it's not great.
It was fine.
Yes.
Yeah, it was fine.
Fine. Well, go to Piston. Piston's great.
I don't remember what I had.
Okay, well, a little bit of everything was your answer. Today we're discussing, not one, we decide to go crazy and watch two.
Surprise.
You're getting a free review on top of the free review.
Yep.
A bonus that you never paid a dime for. You're getting 2 hours of breakdown. Not in real time, but that's what we're going to be discussing. Because you know why, Wei? I watched this episode of Raw the night after WrestleMania 12, and by the end of it, I want to watch the next one.
Wow.
And I did, and I'm glad I did. And on this show today, we have a guest. We're going to hear from Mick Foley discussing, because he was a central figure.
This was the debut of Mankind.
This was the debut of the almost Mason the Mutilator, repackaged to be... Mankind, debuting in San Bernardino, California. So we'll hear from Mick Foley describing the match with Bob Holly, which he almost forgot even happened because of the angle that was on the night after WrestleMania involving The Undertaker. So a little later on, Mick Foley, and then we'll hear more from Mick Foley on The Law this Sunday night as I get the promos out of the way now. I'm very bad at forgetting stuff. So this was a mere 24 hours after WrestleMania 12, which you can go back and listen to our review of from last week.
And what was their taping schedule like at this time?
They did the pay-per-view on Sunday, and then the next night they taped the next month of Raw episodes. They taped four episodes for this crowd.
Starting with this live episode.
Yes. Right? Yes. I would imagine this was probably live to tape. I don't think it would have been live exactly at 9 p.m. given that the taping schedule. So very much like Impact does, where they'll bulk tape and they... The benefit of this way was that coming out of WrestleMania, you had to have all of your television written because they do Raw on the Monday, and then Tuesday night they do all the Superstars tapings. Mm. So you had to know everything for the In Your House pay-per-view. You knew the whole lineup, and then you had to book it accordingly. So you came out of WrestleMania, you knew your plan. Mm. It forced you to have everything in a row, and none of this... The day of WrestleMania, let's go with this option instead. No, everything had to be pretty much set in stone because your tapings were written and everything was set.
It kind of, in a way, probably helped the whole injury thing because you're forcing guys to do all their matches for a month in a day or two.
Yeah, I mean, you look at different guys that would have to do, you're right, the pay-per-view on Sunday, which for Michaels was legitimately over 61 minutes, and then he comes back. He did the match with Lawler and the other segments he was involved in, and all the guys. They had three straight nights, and it was eight television episodes plus a pay-per-view in the span of three evenings. Mm. So it was heavy. And then they got on a plane to go to Germany for like a 2.5-week tour.
But it's not really all that crazy because they really had to only shoot these are 40-minute episodes. So,
yes.
I mean, every episode of Raw today is just about as long as, what, three episodes?
The two episodes we're reviewing today have, like, a combined time of, like, an hour 30 compared to, like, 2:10 that we get on Raw in real time on a Monday night, which is staggering.
It'd probably be more than that with the matches going on between commercial breaks.
Right. So this was at a point where Nitro was certainly building up, but not at the point where Nitro had just started to coast and was just walloping Raw. In fact, Raw would beat Nitro the night after WrestleMania with a 2.9 to Nitro's 2.8. And also on this Monday night, they introduced a sneaky little tactic with Raw starting at 8:57 p.m. to get a three-minute jump on Nitro.
Hmm. Interesting.
They're getting dirty now, Way.
Yeah.
Getting the USA Network involved.
3 whole minutes.
Yes. This was when both shows were still an hour.
And what did Nitro do? Start at 8:56?
I was surprised that they didn't end up doing that.
Didn't TBS used to do 9:05?
They did all of that, and Ted Turner...
What's the idea?
Turner wrote in his book about how everything just started then, and when you... Do you remember the old TV guide?
Yeah.
And they'd have the tables with all the channels, and you just see them all under the 9 p.m. bar, for instance.
Right.
And then you'd have to shift it on TBS, and it would say 9:05. And therefore, it would stand out more that it's not 9 o'clock, it's 9:05, or in wrestling's case, 6:05.
But doesn't that go against, you know, what Vince might have been thinking here, starting 3 minutes earlier, hoping to catch people at the end of another show that they've been watching before their next show starts?
Well, I think the thinking was that wrestling fans are sitting down, and what's going to grab their attention first? We can either try every week to have the hottest thing start the show, or we can just customize it to when they sit down, Raw's on 3 minutes before, let's get them then, and hopefully they won't be enticed to flip over to Nitro 3 minutes later. They'll want to sit through Raw. That was the thinking, was just grab them as early as possible and keep them there. So there was a big emphasis as the show started, grab them, announce what's coming up in the hour, and retain them. Don't give them a reason to go flip on over to Nitro, whereas they both start right at 9 p.m. You might sit down and you're going to think in my head, I'm watching Nitro. Mm-hmm. I mean, believe me, a lot of thought was put into this, and a lot of it was just out of their control. The better show was going to grab your interest each week.
Mm-hmm.
Vince McMahon and Jerry Lawler, they voiced over highlights from WrestleMania, and we got a shot of the bowl cut kid in the recap video.
Oh, yes.
Yes, a famous fan. Mm-hmm. I swear, Way, I'd never heard of this guy before, and what a legend this man is online.
I've seen him. You've certainly seen that picture before, right? But the bowl cut kid, he's actually in a number of shows from this era.
It's amazing.
WCW,
and every time with the look on his face, the Chris Farley yell.
Yeah.
That's the best way I can describe him.
Mm-hmm. People on Reddit are actually trying to track him down.
Oh, wow.
So if you know the whereabouts of the bowl cut kid, do let the people on
Reddit. If the bowl cut kid is listening, you contact us. You will be a guest on this show, I promise.
Yeah.
Those are the guests I want.
Mm-hmm.
And the voiceover states that we shared in the ecstasy and agony. I guess implying Michaels was the ecstasy and Bret Hart was the agony of WrestleMania. Vince tees up an appearance of the new WWF champion tonight and then throws to the introduction of Mankind, who comes out and the very first words out of Vince McMahon's mouth to describe this man he has signed, who would go on to win championships, headline pay-per-views, become a big star for the company at their peak period. Vince McMahon's first words, not a pretty sight. I guess not. I mean, that was not the direction of Mankind. He was supposed to be a...
Mutilated, I guess.
Her. Could you imagine the run of Mason? Do you think his name, Mason, the Mutilator, would have curtailed his success?
I mean, not that much. Mankind is not a great name, either. I feel like they would have probably ultimately changed it. Like, Steve Austin had the Ringmaster. You know, ultimately shed that.
Lawler says that Mankind tried to enter an ugly contest, and they told him, no professionals. That was Lawler's joke, and fitting that the joke would be told on April Fool's Day, no less. Mankind and Bob Holly. That was our introduction. Now, what made this an interesting Raw, we talked about this kind of where you want to trace the roots back to the night after WrestleMania being somewhere where you introduce a new character, put some emphasis on that show. You didn't really get that in the first couple of years of Raw. But this Raw, you had a number of people that traveled to WrestleMania and stuck around for the tapings the next night. So you got a very small contingent facing the hard camera that were clearly your hardcore fans with their insider signs, insider chants. And this was about the only pocket that really knew that this was Mick Foley. Mm-hmm. Because it wasn't this eruption when Mick Foley came out on Raw. Mm-hmm. But there was a pocket. They were chanting, he's hardcore during the match. And some of the signs that they had here, bring back the conquistadors, Bischoff and Mongo make me vomit. I mean, this was, you want to trace back to just this this smart fan, so to speak. It was there in San Bernardino that night,
mm-hmm,
for the tapings. And later, Vince would actually rail on these fans during a particular injury angle. Mankind attacks Bob Holly from behind and just batters him in the corner, hits a running knee. He's pulling his hair out, which was always just a bizarre visual.
Yeah. How do you think he managed to do that? Just like put clumps of hair?
Yeah. I don't know if, like, myself, if I was doing this, I would certainly work it and just find,
of course, yeah,
clumps of stuff. I'm not...
I don't think he'd be pulling out his hair.
There is a mentality of guys that I'm sure would just rip apart, but I'm sure there was a lot of thought put into this on McFoley's part.
Yeah. A lot of great thought put into the design of this character and doing little things like that that, I mean, in hindsight, they really feel like, you know... kind of corny haunted house type of tricks, like pulling out your own hair. But I think at the time they really worked for me as a kid.
What made this character work, I give so much credit to Mick Foley, because this was a character that, listen, the WWF, they certainly put a lot of thought into the outfit and the costume and marketing this character. But this thing, if it was just Joe Blow that they put under this mask to get this character over, this thing would have died, I feel, almost instantly. Because I don't think Vince McMahon and the company as a whole really knew what this character was going to be. They positioned him well with The Undertaker. They were serious about him, giving him a real feud to kick this off. But it was the promos, it was just the mannerisms that Mick Foley brought to this. I mean, this guy was as close to a legitimate method actor as you were going to get in the WWF circa 1996 that helped make this work. Mm. And look how they grew that character, just the Jim Ross interviews and where you ultimately took this character to. I don't think many could have forecasted that, even the most optimistic fan in 96.
Mm-hmm.
Holly fires back, hit his big drop kick, and then Mankind ducks. Holly runs over the top to the floor and gets dropped on the apron by Mankind. This is where the crowd is chanting. He's hardcore. He attacks Holly in the Tree of Woe and then applies the Mandible Claw. And Holly is yelling. He's foaming at the mouth. And the finish comes at 3:21.
The debut of the Mandible Claw here. And just a really interesting, freaky looking move. And it's a move that is so, it's not even really a move. You're sticking your fingers down a person's throat. And somebody like Mick Foley must have.
You'd probably tap if someone did that to you, though.
Yeah, it's disgusting.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a submission in that sense, but you would, I mean, you get someone's gag reflex off. I mean, this is something that someone pulled this on you.
It's staph infection or something.
Oh, there's tons of gross stuff that could happen from this.
But just I'd love to sit in on the conversation when, you know, whoever proposed this move to Mick Foley for them to run with this, because it's just so unique. And for somebody like Mick Foley, who's been doing your diving apron, diving elbow, and basically, you know, killing yourself every night with that finisher, to go from that to sticking your fingers down a person's throat and arguably getting the same, if not a bigger reaction by doing something as simple as this, I think it's a really brilliant thing. Here, when they first debuted it, they had this, like, white stuff come out of his opponent's mouths, like they're foaming.
Yeah.
And it just made it so incredibly strange and freaky, and I think it really worked. Especially, I remember watching this as a kid, just not really knowing what the hell this was. So this character, I thought this was a good debut. He felt legitimately creepy. And, you know, much like Goldust, seemed like a more adult and serious character. In a way, a little campy, but I think this was done better than you know, your typical WWE 90s camp. And he felt legitimately creepy to me in here.
He also felt completely different than the Mick Foley you had. If you had been a fan of his in ECW, WCW, Japan, Texas, this felt like you could tell it was Mick Foley, but he was so different.
Oh, yeah. It was the mask.
It was a whole rebranding of Mick Foley. Mm-hmm. And I thought the foaming, listen, foaming doesn't get enough credit for getting submissions over. I mean, Samoa Joe in NXT, what's gotten that coquina clutch over was Finn Balor just spitting up and just looking a mess. Yeah. Like this guy was about to just go into shock. Yeah. As a result of this. Also, very difficult, especially in this era, for a guy to come in and you're given a submission finish. I mean, this was still an era, and some of that exists even to this day, where guys, they will lose a match, but submissions, they'll get their back up against the wall when it comes to selling a submission. And that was another aspect to all of this. That's why I feel all wrestlers, it always benefited you to have a move in which you could just pin the guy. Because certain guys, they'd have an ego about things when it came to losing. They're like, oh, I'll lose the match, but I'm not going to submit to a finish. Hmm. It's somehow beneath them.
I wonder how much.
So it was a credit to the guys that sold this as well.
Yeah, like I wonder how much fight, if any, you know, people would be giving for a move like this. You want to stick your fingers down my throat, and you want me to lose like that?
Well, as well, Mick will describe later in the interview just all the problems he had working under this mask, how hot it got, and not being used to wearing a mask. On top of that, how awkward could you imagine? Just imagine way you rolling and suddenly we're going to tape your fingers together, your middle and your two fingers together.
Yeah.
And having to work a match like that.
Sure. It's like wearing gloves.
I mean, that would take, to me, you wouldn't even think of it. What an adjustment that would be for just such basic things.
Right.
That you take for granted that your fingers provide for you. And now all of a sudden you're taping them together and having to work that with essentially one less finger.
You'd be a four-fingered person, like a Ninja Turtle or something.
Yeah.
Or maybe Simpsons. Do Ninja Turtles have, what, three? They have three fingers? Fact check that, everybody.
Let us know. So there you go. That was Mick Foley's debut. Not the biggest involvement of Mick Foley on this show. That would still be to come. Still coming up?
Still to come.
I butchered it somehow.
No, you...
My brain is frozen right now as I speak.
You're foaming at the mouth.
I am. There were still shots from WrestleMania with Mark Marrow's debut, Mark Morrow, and Hunter's Attack setting up their little program. And Sable is shown in the front row having bought a ticket. So what does that tell you about ticket sales, where Sable was able to scoop up a front row ticket, much like she was on that episode of Nitro in 1999, where she had an ongoing lawsuit with the WWF while still under contract to them and just happened to get a front row ticket to Nitro right during that entire deal. That's amazing, whoever Sable's personal ticket brokers are.
Yeah, StubHub.
Front row tickets for Sable. There was a highlight pack pushing the WrestleMania replay. And then we got fan reactions to WrestleMania, which essentially led to just various people screaming into the mic. It was unanimous that they all loved the show, and Vince calls it one of the greatest of all time.
Okay.
One of the greatest. I mean, there had only been 12, so I mean, that's
still quite a few.
Mark Marrow then made his in-ring debut for the WWF, at least on television, taking on Isaac Yankem. DDS. Remember him? Marrow comes out and doing your favorite pose, pointing at his eyes.
That's my favorite.
Well, you brought it up last week during his interview, telling Todd Pelton, go look into these eyes. Mm. And then during his entrance, he comes out and he's just pointing to them.
Yeah.
Just instructing all the fans, look into these eyes. Sable was clapping for his entrance.
He does have pretty crazy eyes. I mean, if you're to look at Mark Marrow,
he's very wide eyed. Yes.
Yeah. His defining characteristic, it could be a lot of things. Could be that mullet, could be the mustache, but the eyes for sure.
I would love to see Vince just sit down with a fresh piece of meat and how he feels it out, how he observes the most odd things about their presentation, and then from there it just grows into that character.
You look like a cat.
Those eyes are wild, because you're a wild man. Do you even own a comb? And your wife, she reminds me of a horse, a Sable.
Sable's horses?
Sable, yeah. Sable.
I thought they were cats.
A Sable is a horse.
I thought they were cats.
Let's see what we get when we run.
They're also cars.
Well, the first thing is almost like this buffalo creature.
Oh, okay.
I mean, that almost looks like a cat. I mean, to her credit, Rena Marrow is right up here on the Google search in terms of what people identify with as a Sable. I mean, just women, Brock Lesnar, what looks to be sand, and various animals with ivory growing out of them.
Goat thing.
There's a... That looks like a buffalo. American Wildlife Foundation. The Sable Christine Meek...
I've never seen. I don't even know what kind of animal that is.
Listen,
a gazelle?
Yeah. Look. Oh, look. This was a. This is what they. This is the after picture of a Sable, a coat.
Okay.
So Sable is just marking out for Marrow, and then our match begins with a drop kick that sends Kane to the floor, and then Marrow with a tope con hilo.
Yeah.
I mean, Mark Marrow gets a lot of criticism thrown his way because he came in, he got a very nice contract when the WWF signed him. I mean, I'm not going to plead the case that this was a terribly underutilized performer, but Mark Marrow was not the shits by any stretch. He had his good matches, he had the guys that could very well work with him, and he had a decent in-ring repertoire, I will say, for the time.
Yeah, I think back then he definitely seemed like a bit of a standout in terms of his high-flying ability. But you compare it to, I'd say even some of the guys back then, but certainly the people of today, I thought he was a little sloppy, you know, in terms of his high-flying ability. He could pull off a lot of moves, but not really make him look as great.
Did a shooting star?
Sure.
I mean, that has to be the first time anyone in the WWF ever did that move. Was Mark Marrow, the shooting star. There was a tilt-a-whirl head scissors by Marrow, double axe off the top, and then Yankem clotheslined Marrow down. This is when Huntress shows up, sitting next to Sable and pleading to her. And there's a crucifix by Marrow for a two count. Mero then hits him with punches, drops him with a big left as he winds up, and then climbs to the top and hits a sunset flip off the top and pins Yankum at 426. Sable gets up, she's clapping, and Hunter is very upset at this disrespect. Mero comes over, and then Sable slaps Hunter, leaves with Mark Mero, and Tony Chimmel has to hold back Hunter. And a fan, this was my highlight, he puts out his hand right in front of Mark Mero and just says, good job. And Mero stares at this fan and then just walks away as he leaves him hanging.
Whoa,
with the hand out.
What a wild man.
Oh, Mero, you just, I mean, this poor fan just wanted to congratulate him on a job well done against Isaac Yankum, getting no love from Johnny B. Bad.
That's right. I thought the match was a little bit long for a debut, and I found myself kind of losing interest. Yankum, I think he's clearly very agile as a big man, but not enough interest there in the match for me to hold my interest. I think part of the confusion with Mark Mero is just, what exactly is this gimmick supposed to be? You know, what the fuck is a wild man? And, I mean, he kind of had a Tarzan motif with his tights and all that.
Tarzan and Jane. I think that was the idea with those two.
Okay, well,
can you imagine the vignettes if they had just gone all out? Like, if this was 5 years earlier, the Mark Mero and Sable vignettes from the wild jungle?
Maybe if this was, like,
in his cave.
I'd say 15 years earlier, okay? Maybe in Memphis this might have worked out better. But
5 years before this featured Saba Simba in the WWF.
And how great was that?
I'm not saying any of this is great. I'm just thinking their mindset of cheesy vignette ideas. I think you're giving too much credit to the 1996 Brain Trust.
But I'd say even for 96, this was maybe too cheesy.
What are the odds that this year's WrestleMania, 20 years later, we know Hunter will be wrestling on the card. Kane will be there in some form or fashion.
He'll be in the battle role, yeah.
He will be.
Sable?
Sable will probably be there.
She'll be backstage.
Probably. And Mark Mero...
Where's he going to be?
Well, I'm just saying that...
At WrestleCon.
He probably will be at WrestleCon. But if Jacqueline's going into the Hall of Fame...
What?
You could argue, if you need someone to... Probably they'll get one of the women to induct Jacqueline. But Mark Mero would be someone you closely associate with Jacqueline.
Maybe it's...
I'm not expecting that one.
Yeah, I'm not expecting that either.
I'm just saying, if it's a stretch, but... Here we are 20 years later, and at least two of them are going to be on WrestleMania, which is astounding in and of itself.
Well, if you look at the roster on this particular show, a lot of them actually ended up having quite the long career. We had Justin Hawk Bradshaw and The Undertaker, Bob Holly and Mick Foley in the first match. So the roster on this
We'll have Foley,
show.
Jerry Lawler, Shawn Michaels, all in some form or fashion... part of WrestleMania this year.
I mean,
it's expected.
Say what you will about that 96 roster. A lot of them ended up enduring.
Then they plug the Warriors appearance for next week's Raw, The Art of the Hook. Mm-hmm. And then we had these bizarre cutaways to some ads for an April Fool's special they were running on the USA Network, which just sounds dreadful, hosted by Ed Begley Jr., which was a weekly world news special, like the tabloid newspaper. And this featured him discussing, like, lube jobs while he was riding his bike. And I don't know what these were. I don't know. These weren't effective in any way because I didn't know what the hell this show was coming after. And I guarantee you, I would not have been sticking around for what was to follow Raw.
Speaking of action, we caught up earlier with Ed the Biker Bigley. As a matter of fact, today... he's on his way to host the weekly World News April Fool's Special. It's going to be a great show. Let's find out where he is.
Okay. Go to the end of the block. Make a right at the nude barbershop. What does that mean? Who's nude? The barber? The customer? I guess I could use a trim. Ooh, scissors. Maybe not. That reminds me of the case of the stripper accidentally killed a customer, got too close to the action. Stick around. You'll meet her after Raw.
Yeah, I have no idea what this was. We didn't get USA back then. So.
But thank God they kept these on the network version of Raw. I mean, these, we'll cut out certain things, but the Ed Begley Jr. inserts, those can stay. They recap the Body Donnas winning the vacant tag titles over the Godwins, and a rematch will happen at In Your House later that month, leading to the Body Donnas coming out with Sonny to take on Aldo Credible, Montoya, and Barry Horowitz in a non-title match. Sunny notes that her outfit is so nice, she had to wear it twice, perhaps indicating that she didn't pack alternate outfits for this swing.
She definitely didn't wash. Okay, in 24 hours, you're not going to wash and dry.
Not a chance. WrestleMania after party, get to yeah. San Bernardino. There's no laundry in there. Lawler kept bringing up Sonny's Best Buns Award. And I think Lawler, I mean, he just had no filter here when it came to his freedom to just express every thought in his head as a hot woman was on television and he could react in his most natural state. Zip lifted Montoya into a...
Which one is Zip?
Zip is Tom Pritchard. Skip was Candido. Zip lifted Montoya into a head scissors on Skip and took both down. And then the Body Donnas go to the floor. Lawler says they partied too hard last night and they look a little tired today. Which, I don't know if that was Lawler giving us some inside information or not. Skip attacked Montoya from behind after the blind tag. Then there was a double flapjack to Montoya and double-teamed them in their corner. Montoya hit a vertical suplex, which sent Skip to the floor, and a high cross to the floor by Aldo Montoya. And then a tag to Barry Horowitz, cradled Skip, and Zip made the save. Goofiest fucking names. Like, not even funny the first time you hear them. Mm-hmm. Skip and Zip. And they forced Tom Pritchard to cut his hair for this gimmick as well. Mm-hmm. There was a bridging German by Skip to Aldo Montoya for a two count, spine buster by Skip, and then Skip hit a top rope Hurricane Rana, followed by the bombs away by Zip, the most impressive sequence of the show, and a seated splash off the top by Zip for the win at 5:31, and Vince noting that Sunny uses her sexuality to her advantage. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm. I thought all four men looked really good here. In particular, Aldo, I thought this was actually a pretty good match on this show.
This was. These were, you know, four very good performers mm-hmm. that were in an environment where they weren't really encouraged all that much to go out and have great matches. But mm-hmm. they had the ability to, per the standards of the time. Bob Backlund was showing campaigning in the crowd. And then they plugged the Superstars line. The only reason I bring this up is because the music they had was Lex Luger's WCW theme.
Oh, really?
As the background music for the Superstar line.
How was that?
I don't know. Maybe it was royalty-free music. Mm. More fan reactions to WrestleMania, and then Vince is in the ring and welcomes the leader of the new generation. And, my God, Vince McMahon.
Ladies and gentlemen, he is the leader of the new WWF generation. He is the world's wrestling generation champion. He is Shawn Michaels.
I think this guy was just at the edge of his seat. He was so excited to have Shawn Michaels as his champion. As Shawn came out with the title, and in the style of your favorite baseball team winning the World Series, we had the commemorative ball cap with Shawn yes. Michaels with the new WWF champion baseball hat. This ugly white hat with text on the front of it. I mean, mm-hmm. god-awful, and guaranteed they sold a handful of these at the tapings that night. He comes out. He gets flowers. He's kissing the women in the front row. Pyro as he enters, and then he gets up, and Shawn totally read this sign, where a guy had a sign that read, Shawn who? And he was clearly annoyed by it. And Vince just says, before we get into everything, let's hear it for the Hitman. And Michaels calls this the greatest moment of his life. He says, the people picked him up last night, and he thanks the fans. They announced that he will take on Jerry Lawler next week and that Diesel will be on commentary for this match. And then they showed the footage of Diesel hitting Michaels with a chair at the last Madison Square Garden house show from 2 weeks ago. Michaels says that Brett made him a believer and will always be a champion in his eyes and the fans' eyes. And he won't let Vince wrap up the interview. He's got much more to say. He says he will wear this belt with the honor, dignity, and class that Brett did in the past. And there's a big Burger King chant. And then he calls him King Fish. And he will send him back to his White Castle, if you know what I mean. And then they announce the match with Diesel for In Your House. And they refer to the two as Skipper and Gilligan, But that ship has sunk, and he's going to dance all over the face of Diesel at In Your House. And this would be the focus. This would be the focus of the next episode. But never an explanation as to why Diesel's getting this match, other than he made the very opportune attack on Shawn Michaels and hedged his bets ahead of WrestleMania, which overcame a loss to The Undertaker at WrestleMania.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. No mention of it. But I feel like that's something you can almost get away with, you know, especially for maybe a younger demographic that they're catering towards back then. I feel like a lot of people aren't really thinking about wins and losses as much as they are. They would look forward to a potential matchup. You know what I mean? I think just the announcement of Diesel versus Shawn Michaels is enough for people to not necessarily question why he's getting it. You know?
Can we agree what we said last week? If Diesel was not leaving and had given his notice, I think it's 100% he beats The Undertaker at WrestleMania.
Sure.
I think 100% at this point.
That.
And they booked it as if he had won the match.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it was essentially, we're not going to have this guy beat one of our major guys that is sticking around, but we also know that we want to get another main event out of Diesel. We want to get another loss out of Diesel. And it made the most sense to go to Shawn and Diesel at In Your House. I don't disagree with the direction.
I thought this was a good victory speech from Shawn. He just came out and pretty much had to build towards that Nash match, which he did. Also had to build up to a Lawler match the next week, which he did as well. He was also getting he was getting some boos here, and this was almost like an instance of a split crowd, like a John Cena crowd.
Because it was so predictable. They're shoving him down our throat, and the hardcores hated him. I mean,
it might have been that. I mean, I think it's also because there are a lot of Bret Hart fans who wanted to see Bret win as well. They're trying to promote a double babyface thing. But I thought Shawn, the character, handled it well.
Will Roman Reigns have a commemorative baseball cap this year?
I could only hope so, yes. But Shawn here put over Bret, and it seemed to swing the crowd by the end.
Yeah, and you certainly, I mean, everything was left lingering after WrestleMania. That rematch, you knew it wasn't happening immediately, but it was there in the back of your mind that you could go back to at some point in time, even though Bret was very much playing it up at the point that he might never come back. I mean, they were kind of dangling that out there.
Yeah, no mention of Bret, really, like no follow-up.
Other than this, there was nothing. Then we had a Shop Zone ad, way where you could get a piece of WrestleMania history forever by ordering the new championship matte plaque. Only 4,800 of these are going to be sold.
But that's not all. On this plaque will be a piece of the actual canvas that the greatest title match of all time was held on. Take a look at it, roll it out, cut it up. You have a chance to own a piece of history, a lifetime memory, the WrestleMania Championship Matte Plaque. You know the number to call.
With a part of the actual canvas, part of the plaque that you could order.
Yeah, whose job is it to cut up at 4,800 pieces of that, man?
I just hope this came with a letter of authenticity. I mean, you wouldn't want to fear that this one mat, you could only fit 1,000 of these plaques, and then you run out of canvas.
You're telling me that they're like, there's going to be like Shawn Michaels' sweat or Bret Hart's saliva on portions of this mat?
There should be. I mean, I would run a DNA test on my mat plaque to make sure they weren't just giving me some random house show canvas.
That's disgusting.
I don't want to see, the canvas from Madison Square Garden a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
I want the WrestleMania 12 canvas.
Hmm.
I wonder if they could up the price if you got part of that WrestleMania 12 logo that was on the canvas.
Sure.
I mean, that should have more value than just a random gray part of the canvas that means nothing.
They also said all 4,800 plaques will be signed by Shawn Michaels.
Yeah, which, so, again,
have fun doing that.
I would question the legitimacy of some of these.
Why?
Things.
Why do you say so?
Because
I believe it.
Because I don't imagine them actually making Shawn sign 4,800 of these.
Hey, you missed Total Divas where they had Nikki Bella sign. She had the Kiss cards with her makeup on.
How many?
Or with her lipstick. It was several hundred, at least.
Did you see each one kissed?
I didn't see each one, but I saw the stack.
They edited it. Okay.
Yeah. What? So they're supposed to air a whole 2 hours of Nikki Bella kissing
for guys. UFC, they make them sign like 150 posters when they check in.
4,800 seems quite crazy. But, I mean, you know, these are hard workers.
Vince runs through the whole card for next week. What a welcome change. Vader against Yokozuna. Bulldog and Ahmed Johnson in an arm wrestling contest. And Shawn Michaels versus Jerry Lawler, which was the match I wanted to see personally. Yeah. I was like, man, I did not see this match when it aired. I would love to see these two have a match. And I think this is, if I am one small anecdotal piece of evidence, just outlining this card was the main reason I want to watch the next week. They got my interest for the following week. Mm-hmm. Not to mention a good old Warrior promo that could, of course, grab you. And then our main event was Justin Hawk Bradshaw with Uncle Zebekiah against The Undertaker with Paul Bearer. Bradshaw attacked him as the bell sounded, clotheslined him, beats down on Taker, sends him to the floor, and then we got the Karate Fighter Slam of the Week promoted during the break. Bradshaw hit a top rope shoulder block, comes off the top again. This time he's caught and hit with a power slam. Bradshaw landed a big boot, and then Taker ducked a clothesline, hit a flying clothesline, and then follows with a choke slam, calls for the tombstone, and hits it. But that's when Mankind runs in and attacks The Undertaker for the DQ at 3:52, give or take, with the commercial break. And then Mankind just runs Taker into the steps, hit the running elbow drop off the apron, which I'm glad they saved that for him and didn't just throw that out there in the Holly match, his running elbow off the apron, which he got a lot of distance off of at this point in 96. Not as good for his hip long term, but this was a signature spot for him. Applied the mandible claw, gets pulled off by officials, and Taker is foaming at the mouth, and they state there will be an update on The Undertaker next week, along with the Ultimate Warrior interview. I don't even know if we really got an update on The Undertaker in the second episode.
I don't recall.
The dead man may have been just that after this attack, for all we knew, on April 1st of 96. But a big angle to end things and setting off Mankind into a very big feud with, you could argue, with Brett gone, the number two babyface in the company.
Sure. I think it was an excellent debut for Mick Foley. I think he immediately gets slotted into a very high part of the card. And it was clear that they had pretty serious hopes for this guy. It certainly left a better lasting impression than Mark Marrow's in-ring debut.
Yes, certainly you were thinking of Mick Foley at the end of this show as opposed to Mark Marrow.
Two WCW guys.
Yes, two guys from WCW in the past. I guess at this point, do you want to hear from Mick Foley?
Sure.
Because he doesn't really have much involvement on the second episode. So I spoke with Mick Foley recently. He's promoting his WrestleMania Dream Vacation Raffle, which you can enter at realmickfoley.com, which expires next week. This is a great fundraiser he does every year. All the proceeds go to the Rain organization. And if you win this sweepstakes, you win tickets to WrestleMania, hotel accommodations, a flight from anywhere in the world to Dallas. You get tickets to the Hall of Fame, to NXT. There's so much. It's an incredible value, and I think it's very cool that Mick Foley does this every year to raise awareness for Reign. So that was the impetus to have him on, and I discussed with him the night after WrestleMania 12, making his debut and his own thoughts on the debut in San Bernardino, California. Part of the sweepstakes include two tickets to Monday Night Raw the night after WrestleMania, which has become the biggest Raw of the year. It's the unofficial season premiere. And when you trace back to when the night after WrestleMania featured a major character debuting, I go back to April 1st of 1996 in San Bernardino, California, with Mankind coming out to start the show against Bob Holly. And I just wanted you to take us into the headspace of Mick Foley walking out. You're making your debut, and it was almost like the match, I'm sure that was your focus, but of course, more to come with the attacking a major character in The Undertaker to end the show. It was a very big night for you, and I think that's where we can look at WrestleMania the night after becoming a real big pivot point for where the stories were going.
Yeah. I tend to forget about the match with Bob because the attack in The Undertaker was such a big deal. And I remember DDP telling me that he called Eric Bischoff at the time and said, "Bish, that's going to draw." And it's pretty high praise, because at the time, you know, Undertaker's opponents had just been, and he'd just come off a very good match at Mania with Kevin Nash, Kevin's last match with the show. But by and large, all the opponents that had been lined up for the Undertaker for years were just like, who can we find who's bigger than the Undertaker, you know, heavier than the Undertaker? And in this case, Taker wanted to shift gears and thought that I was a guy that he could do business with, and everything changed. I mean, everything changed that night. And I know I was, I was panicked because it was so difficult to wrestle in a mask. You know, I remember calling my wife and saying, maybe I could just wear it for a few weeks and become Cactus Jack. Really hard to breathe in there. And, it was strange coming out where people didn't know who I was. You know, like, you had your diehard WCW fans who did.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, I was a new guy coming out. And, thankfully I worked that program and things caught on, and everything changed. But, yeah, you can't emphasize it. That's maybe more important than Mania itself.
You also had Vince McMahon at ringside calling the match. In terms of, I mean, at that moment, that night, your first impression, were you still, in your belief, proving yourself to Vince? Was this still your audition? Do you feel that he was sold on you? Because you've outlined the hesitancy of him to bring you in for all those years. What was that dynamic like, at least at the onset of the character?
Well, it's 20 years later, and I'm still trying to earn Vince's approval. So it's a never-ending process. Hey, look, fortunately, I was not aware of just how hard that struggle had been. You know, I joked around. I didn't joke around. It was a true story. But the last, when I did my special for the network about Bruce Pritchard telling me 2 summers ago that Mr. McMahon finally slammed his hand down on the table. I don't know what we can say language-wise. So
it's an open book here. Open forum.
All right, damn it. I'll bring him in. I'm covering up his face. So, had I known that, how seedy he thought I looked as a real human being, I probably wouldn't have taken the offer to come in. Like, that was a pretty uphill struggle, but he put his heart into calling it and got behind the character. And a year later, we did the big interview with Jim Ross in Stanford, a series of interviews, and that really changed things for Mankind. And from that point on, he was really sold on the character. But I don't envy people who have to go out, in my case, and hear him do the play-by-play, which is pretty surreal when you've grown up with Vince McMahon as your play-by-play guy, and you hear him calling your match. And I don't envy the guys who have Mr. McMahon behind the curtain either. Because when you come back, the worst thing you can do is look at him and go, how did it go? Like, it's a fine art, fine art. You have to walk through the curtain as if you know that it went well. It's crazy. They should give you a psychology textbook when you join WWE.
You could probably write it, Mick, I think, from all the different...
I still don't know it all. I still, there's that unwritten rule of who you stand up to shake hands with, who you don't. it's a strange world, but it's a really, it's a cool world. And I'm glad that, with all the history I've had, that I'm still welcome back there pretty much anytime.
That was Mick Foley, and he will be joining us on The Law Sunday night for an extended discussion on many other topics as well, including the retirement of Bryan Danielson and much more. So you can catch Mick Foley Sunday night, 11 Eastern, on The Law. As we move on to the second episode coming out of WrestleMania 12 on April the 8th of 1996, an important night for Monday Night Raw, because this was one night where they ran unopposed with no Monday Nitro. And I mentioned they did a 2-9 the night after WrestleMania. Without Nitro, they did a 4.7 this week. And they would have a great benefit coming up over the next couple of weeks, because the NBA playoffs were about to commence. And, of course, TNT had the rights to the opening round playoffs, and that force Nitro to be bounced around with their time slot. So it was a good time for Raw at this point in time, coming out of WrestleMania and going into their next pay-per-view. This one just kind of started off cold. There was no pyro to start off the show. It was right into Yokozuna's entrance, but with Jerry Lawler wrestling on the show, we got Mr. McMahon and Mr. Perfect together.
Mm-hmm.
Were you a fan of this combination, and in particular Kurt Hennig as a color commentator?
I think I preferred Lawler.
I did too.
Even at this point. But I think Mr. Perfect was very good, especially, you know, there is a lot of emphasis on their color commentators playing that heel role, that very definite heel role. And I thought Mr. Perfect did a good job, but not as good as Jerry Lawler at this time.
Not perfect. He was kind of your poor man's Jesse Ventura, kind of playing that ex-wrestler who would go head-to-head on Vince McMahon's points that he would make. But you're right.
Still good, but...
Yeah, I never listened to Mr. Perfect and thought, oh, God, this guy's brutal. Yeah. Never thought that. But in terms of your elite color commentators, he wouldn't be in that top mix.
Right.
Yokozuna and Vader started off the show. I remember this angle so vividly. These two just blast each other at the start of this match. I mean, just rocking each other in the side of the head, right in the ear. So painful. And from everyone that would describe Vader's snug abilities, I guarantee you he wasn't pulling anything here. It just walloped Yokozuna, who responded in kind. Yokozuna hit a Samoan drop. As much as you talk about Yokozuna being agile for his time, the heel run he had, from watching the WrestleMania comeback he had during the six-man and this match, his babyface work is so underrated.
Yeah.
This guy, had he been able to just keep his weight in order, which was very unfortunate, this guy was a really very good babyface.
Mm-hmm.
And for a guy that big to have sympathy, had a ton of fire with his comebacks, and then is selling for this angle, I think it's a part of Yokozuna that doesn't get stressed enough.
Yeah, I think it just goes to show just how great of a pro wrestler all around he was. I mean, I feel like you could probably expect that coming from, you know, the family that he does come from. But it was this little babyface run was really nice to see him kind of work a more diverse style.
Vince notes that we started a bit earlier, and we will be every week on the USA Network, noting the 8:57 p.m. start time. Vader pummels him in the corner. Cornette then hits Yokozuna with a tennis racket, and Yoko then responds with a urinage, described as a suplex by Vince McMahon, and then leg drop Vader, hits him with big forearms in the corner, kind of the same spot from WrestleMania, and then Yokozuna misses a splash in the corner, and Cornette holds down Yokozuna's foot as Vader hits a Vader bomb to the ankle, and Yoko just yells in pain. The referee calls the match off at 5:45, then Vader hits a second and third Vader bomb to the left leg. Yokozuna is selling this as though his ankle has been crushed and his leg has been amputated. He was in so much pain. This was a TKO victory awarded to Vader, and sounded like it was a voiceover inserted by Howard Finkel afterwards. And the officials are tending to Yokozuna. A stretcher is brought out, and Vince just loses it on these fans, calling them sick, the ones that are enjoying what Vader did to Yokozuna. And then they show footage during the break where Yoko cannot be taken out on the stretcher, but rather needs a forklift to be taken to the back. I remember this angle just so well, and the forklift, and Yoko selling. Like, you believed this guy's ankle was shattered from this. I thought this was a tremendous angle, but at a time when Yokozuna was certainly kind of wearing down and just, unfortunately, was not really going to be lasting all that long because of all of his weight issues and such.
And that was the idea, right? To take him off of TV so he could lose weight?
Yeah, he was going to disappear for a while, but what a big angle. And the second major angle for Vader, because when he came in earlier in the year, took out Gorilla Monsoon, which was a big injury angle, and then doing this with Yoko. So Vader was the guy that they very much wanted to go with at this time, and then would get the SummerSlam main event eventually.
Yeah, I thought this was really well done, and I thought the match was good. Surprisingly fast, considering who the two participants were. I thought a better match than what they had at WrestleMania, these two. And the angle just was so convincing. I think the fact that this man who doesn't normally, you don't normally hear talk on the microphone, Yokozuna, the fact that he was so screaming so audibly, and doing it just in an incredibly painful and convincing fashion just made everything look and feel really real. So this was really awesome.
I would be, if you could take two just bizarre characters on like random mode and put them as a tag team, I feel the personalities and similarities between Yokozuna and Rusev together as a tag team.
Oh, they'd be great.
They would be. I feel those two would be, because a lot of the charm I enjoy out of Rusev, I saw in Yokozuna here.
Yep.
And Yokozuna as well. I mean, he was put into this role where, I mean, he couldn't even cut promos because we had presented him as this Japanese wrestler that doesn't even know English. Mm-hmm. It's unfortunate. I think Yokozuna could have had.
Yeah, I wonder how his promo would have sounded.
Yeah, like absolutely. The guy could have. He spoke perfect English. Mm-hmm. I just think that Yokozuna. I really enjoyed him out of these reviews going back and watching his fire up spot at WrestleMania and then this angle. There was a lot that Yokozuna could have done as a babyface, mm-hmm. and I always enjoyed him as a heel as well. Vince McMahon is in the ring and announces he's back. And the Ultimate Warriors music plays, and there was no doubt who the star was coming out here. I said Taker was the number two babyface. I think Warrior, at least based on this return pop and the nostalgia, this guy felt like the number one babyface the night after WrestleMania. He came out, this crowd's going insane for him, and Vince asks where he's been, and he responded, deep, deep in the mind is where he has been. And he's been gone for 3.5 years, but the voices never died, and the spirit of the Warrior never died, and stated how the people spoke to him. Then Vince asks about all the challenges that the new generation of the WWF present to Warrior when he was interrupted by Goldust and Marlena. And my immediate reaction while watching this was, I don't know if this exchange is going to hold up to political standards in 2016. Where is this one going to go? Let's put Goldust with Roddy Piper, and then we'll pivot him to an Ultimate Warrior program. So Goldust and Marlena are out, and they announced that these two are going to have a match at In Your House for the Intercontinental title. What a weird move to go from Warrior's comeback, and his first program will be going after the IC title and Goldust.
As opposed to putting him in the main event?
Just not so much that I would argue he should be in the main event. It just felt like a weird one that, I mean, Goldust was one of your top heels. Mm. I guess, you know, there weren't a whole ton of heels that you could pair him with, but just was an odd mix. So he's out, and Goldust does his deep breath, and Warrior just snorts. In response,
come out and play. Warriors 1979. You, little warrior, can come in my house, but nobody will be there. Perhaps, maybe we could play some games, something like a superhero game. Maybe you could be Superman. Maybe I could climb on your back and we could take off and you could fly away with me in the sunset. What do you think about that? Hold it right there, freak! Whatever you're trying to pull from the minds of those you screw with, and whatever those choose to do with what you dish out, let me make it perfectly clear. What is, and whatever you're into, I don't give a shit.
Goldust says, you can come in my house, but no one will be there. Warrior what? Is... These were the words of Goldust. You can come in my house, but no one will be there.
Trying to even think what the double entendre was.
I guarantee you it was meant to be a double entendre.
But what does that mean? No one will be there.
You were supposed to let your imagination run wild.
Hmm.
So Warrior just appears in agony at this sexual innuendo. He calls Goldust a freak and says that whatever Goldust is in, I don't give a shit.
And he actually said it.
They beeped out shit. And then says that he has a full-length action-adventure film for him, Me Kicking Your Ass from Beginning to End, which sounds like a dreadful movie. And drops him with a clothesline, and then Goldust runs off to the back with Marlena.
Yeah. Well,
this could have been way more offensive, given who was involved.
There. If you Google one of his speeches on the internet, you'll find more.
This was tolerant, Ultimate Warrior.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, we got to hear a classic Ultimate Warrior here promo here with Vince McMahon off the start, and he's got very much got that Bray Wyatt type of energy where you think it sounds really cool, but you have no idea what he's talking about.
Maybe that's what Bray's missing, the intensity behind his rambling.
Perhaps. But I did notice a change in his promo style after being confronted with the Goldust stuff. The moment Goldust starts, I guess you could say, making advances on him, we get Warrior speaking like a normal person. Like, the Ultimate Warrior would not say, hold it right there, freak. And he certainly wouldn't say, I don't give a shit. But once you confront him with this Goldust character and question his manhood, I suppose, he snaps into Jim Hellwig, a real offended man. And it was just really interesting to see him completely change a tone of character here.
Yes. Of all the people on this show, who would be at the top of your list that if you were an academic institution that you would want to bring in to be a guest speaker? Would Ultimate Warrior be in your top five?
As a guest speaker in a university that I was...
I guess for entertainment value, he probably would crack that list.
There are a lot of people I'd love to bring in. For entertainment value.
Boy.
I love to bring in Goldust. In the Goldust character.
This was, the Goldust character, it was certainly one that was met with so much criticism, especially at this time in terms of the portrayal and what it promoted. But it was also a character that, I mean, over time, it really doesn't, the baby faces, I should say, and their promos, it doesn't age well with time, where they are presented as the protagonists going against the quote-unquote freak that is Goldust at the time. Then we have an update. Yokozuna has only made it backstage, this poor man in all this pain, and Vader returns and attacks the bad leg again with a chair. And there's a notable point where Yokozuna just yells, "Fuck!" And then there were more chair shots. I think this was the point of overkill.
Yeah.
This was kind of diminishing returns. I mean, we had this huge injury angle, and it was just more, to the point that, oh, my God, spare this man.
It almost took away from the believability of it, because I thought the initial angle was done so well. When you just keep doing it, it just kind of makes it look a little obvious that it's not real.
Hunter Hearst Helmsley took on Duke the Dumpster Drosy. Brought to you by 1996. Drosy runs to the ring and attacks Hunter and clotheslines him to the floor. An Irish whip sends Hunter into the corner, flips over, as Hunter clearly showing who he was influenced by. Hunter then pulls down the top rope and Duke flies to the floor, sends him into the steel steps, and then there's an insert promo by the Wild Man, who promises some wild surprises next week.
Oh, boy.
He's just wild, way. How can he predict what's going to happen?
He loves the Minnesota Wild, loves eating at Wild Wings.
He's all in favor of Major League Baseball's implementation of the wild card.
Oh, nice. He spends his summers at Wildwater Kingdom. He's just wild.
Favorite musician, Zach Wild.
Oh. Favorite song? Wild Thing.
Wild Thing. Oh. Stomps by Hunter. The pedigree is blocked by Duke, and Duke, and he slingshots him into the corner, sends Hunter into the corner, an atomic drop sends Hunter headfirst into the turnbuckle, and follows with a spinebuster as Duke stands up proudly and yells, "It's time to take out the trash," which is worse than the Bree Mode yell. Hunter blocks a spinning side slam and hits the pedigree, which was in rehab mode after the Ultimate Warrior on Sunday night.
I was a little disappointed because I wanted to see Duke hit the trash compactor, which I don't even recall what that move was. I just wanted to see a move that was called the trash compactor.
It's kind of in visual form. It would be his WWF run. And Hunter wins in 6.5 minutes.
Mm.
The workhorse, Duke Drosy, getting some time.
I thought this match was actually kind of boring. But I loved Vince in this match. His energy level was at a 10 here. I'm not really sure why, but he got really excited for this.
They recapped Mankind's attack on The Undertaker last week, so I guess we did get an update here on The Undertaker. He was alive. Then Owen Hart and the British Bulldog came out, and Diana Smith was showing in the front row. Yokozuna finally placed in the ambulance, and Mr. Perfect compares this to Free Willy. With Yokozuna being taken away. I mean, just felt so bad for this poor Rodney Anawahi. Vince presides over the arm wrestling contest between the British Bulldog and Ahmed Johnson. And I guess we've come a long way in our arm wrestling setups because this was two chairs and a wooden table. And the thick wooden table, which I point out because it would become a very integral part of this angle after. I mean, this looked like one of those tables that would be set up for your assembly at school. These were those thick fucking tables.
It was not a worked wooden table.
No, it wasn't the thin wood that was easily breakable. McMahon emphasizes, this isn't a bodybuilding contest, which was maybe a memo. Owen Hart, who was the star of this segment, complained about the oil all over Ahmed Johnson's body, calls him a cheater, saying he can get added leverage because of this oil. And Ahmed just grabs referee Jack Doan and wipes his oil all over Jack Doan's shirt.
What a dick.
Owen was so great.
Jack Doan was his napkin.
God, this segment would have died a death without Owen Hart here. This guy was so great. He's constantly complaining. He's getting, he's stopping and delaying the arm wrestling contest, complaining about everything Ahmed does. Finally, he gets ejected, which was just a downer for me in this segment.
He was very entertaining.
Oh, he was so funny.
Yeah.
The contest starts, and we got this close-up of the giant biceps, and they even had a still of the two engaging to tee up coming up tonight, the arm wrestling contest. Ahmed wins, and Mr. Perfect complains that he used the table. He was grabbing the table for leverage, and they cut to Diana shaking her head in disapproval. And then Bulldog attacks Ahmed with a chair to the back, and then sets up a table in the corner. Now, the first thing I noticed was he didn't extend the legs out, which is how you're supposed to set the table up to avoid
even
guy crushing his spine against these metal legs.
Even in the corner you have to do that? I don't know.
You always open the top there because you don't want to have that metal that you're breaking against.
It would still collapse if you're propping it up into the corner.
It will break, but you're causing issues when you have that bar that you're landing on when you break it. So that wasn't their biggest problem because the problem would arise if the table actually broke because Ahmed gets Irish whipped into the table, which does not break. Then Bulldog sets it up the proper way. They try it again. It does not break. And Ahmed's sweat and baby oil is all over this table at this point. I mean,
it's like a mirror.
Oh, he would have just slid right across this if he was thrown against it. He drops the table onto Ahmed, and the crowd starts chanting, "He's hardcore," and the crowd all became British Bulldog fans. And Mr. Perfect calls attention to the fact that the fans like him.
and Bulldog stomps the table on top of Ahmed, lifts and drops the table onto Ahmed.
This is an indestructible table.
This table refused to play along with the British Bulldog and Ahmed Johnson. And Bulldog did the most British Bulldog thing. He just looked into the camera. He did a big bicep pose and just said, "That's what you get when you mess with the British Bulldog."
Ooh, yeah.
Just angry pose into the camera. I mean, the man was just oozing with definition at this time.
What was Diana's role in here? She was in the crowd for this match.
They were getting her more involved at this point because after the Diesel program, they went to Shawn Michaels and British Bulldog, and Diana got involved, making accusations that Michaels made advances towards her. And yeah, she definitely got involved more in storylines at this point, and they wanted to really plant this in your head that Diana was Bulldog's wife and her storyline involvement in the Shawn program. They announce Goldust and Savio Vega for the IC title next week. And then Diesel comes out for commentary for the main event wearing a Shawn Michaels t-shirt. And he refuses to shake Vince McMahon's hand, putting it out there and then putting his hand up towards his hair, which was one of his moves of doom at the time. And then he asks, "Perfect, how do you do that pencil thing?" as they go to break. When Mr. Perfect would throw the pencil in the air and catch it in the air.
Yes.
So Shawn Michaels and Jerry Lawler had a non-title match. I will say I was very excited to watch these two have a match. It really was more just a... Jerry Lawler knew what his role was in this match. His role was not to play Jerry Lawler, Memphis legend, against WWF champion. It was to play the heel, color commentator, non-wrestler, put in a match and sell for Shawn and make Shawn look great.
This match had a very old-school, slower pace, and it was still interesting to see, though, because I think Lawler's style here allowed him to get a lot of big reactions by doing very little. I think you got to see him really excel at posturing to the crowd, taunting at the crowd, and, you know, it's not necessarily a great match for a main event of a pay-per-view, but I thought it was a fine main event for an exhibition TV match.
Yeah, it was fine. Diesel says he's wearing Michael's shirt because he's part of the clique, which was, I guess, amusing for fans in 96, being the double meaning of who the clique was. Says he wants to destroy Michael's life by taking the title. There were punches from Michaels and Lawler, constantly missing. Lawler pulled something out of his trunks and got the advantage as he choked on Michaels. Then he hit him with a pile driver, and Michaels kicks out of the pile driver. Diesel calls this the greatest sports entertainment in the world right here. Michaels makes a comeback with a flying forearm off the ropes, top rope elbow, doesn't go for the cover. Instead, he mean mugs Diesel at ringside. Lawler then grabs from the trunks, but gets cut off with sweet chin music, and Michaels just gets the pin. No real struggle. And then Michaels and Diesel fight in the ring. Perfect gets up, distracting Michaels, and there's a big boot by Diesel delivered to Michaels. As Perfect passes the title, Diesel lays out Michaels with a belt shot, stands tall with his fist in the air, and Vince is just outraged at this attack by Big Daddy Cool. And that ended what I thought was a very good edition of Raw, and pretty much every segment, in particular on that second episode, was there to build up a match for In Your House. Some big injury angles here to Yokozuna, to Ahmed Johnson, to Shawn Michaels, where the baby faces were left laying. And I thought this was a very productive episode of Raw, and was my more... I enjoyed the second episode more than the first. Though the first had its points, too, with the debut of Mankind.
They had different aims, it seemed.
Yeah.
I thought it was... this style of... Raw and TV production. I thought it was a very simple one, but also very good here in trying to accomplish what they were trying to do. I thought Shawn and Kevin Nash had great chemistry, obviously as partners, but I also thought that was the case with the two of them as adversaries here, too.
That was the tagline. Good friends, better enemies, yes, for In Your House. And what would go on, I think most would agree, the best match of Kevin Nash's career at that In Your House card. All right, we only have a few pieces of
which we've reviewed, I'm pretty sure.
Yes, I think so. Yeah. So you can go back and listen to that. Feedback here. We're going to go through quickly. Peter from Toronto writes, the April 1st Raw definitely left me with one moment I won't forget. The mandible claw by Foley on Holly. And I remember seeing it for the first time thinking he might be legit trying to kill Holly. Once I found out it was Alka-Seltzer, I felt a little better. The seeds were planted the night after WrestleMania 12 for a Mero Triple H feud. But then he goes on to feud with the 1-2-3 Kid at Good Friends Better Enemies. What's up with that? This was a dark period for the tag title since the title change wasn't even on the main WrestleMania card, and the next night we get Horowitz and Montoya as the first opponents for the new champions. I like Shawn as the new champion because it always felt fresh having a new world champion for the first time. The main event had me shocked because I'd never seen someone dominate The Undertaker like Mankind did, let alone in his first night in the company. 8 mandible claws out of 10, this show gave the company a new direction for the most part. The April 8th show definitely had more star power. Vader versus Yokozuna was a feud that should have been one-on-one at WrestleMania 12, so this match on Raw was a little too late in my opinion, but Vader still looked strong at this point. Warrior's promo on Raw had shades of the Attitude Era written all over it. I wonder if it was truly indeed the WWF's interest in making Warrior a more edgier character in 96. Nice to see them rehash the Hunter-Drosy feud from the Royal Rumble pre-show, but Hunter did look good in victory. The arm wrestling just reminded me of the stories I've heard about Owen and Bulldog ribbing the boys, so I'm sure this was something they did backstage, but they just put it in front of the cameras. The Shawn Lawler match was memorable, only because it launched the Shawn and Diesel feud. Nash wearing the Heartbreak Hotel shirt was a nice touch. Nice beatdown by Diesel, and Perfect throwing him the belt to clock him was another nice touch of continuity from 93 when Michaels and Perfect were feuding. This was a great Raw as well. 9 click cams out of 10.
Alka-Seltzer.
Yeah, you gotta make it look legit as possible.
If you want to freak out your friends, that's how you do it. We go to Matt in suburban Detroit, finally, who says, the post-WrestleMania Raws definitely felt more important than in previous years. Mankind took his opportunity and more than made the most of it. Yokozuna's broken leg was a good way to make Vader a super heel. It's disappointing that he didn't get the WWF title. The most surprising thing to me was Isaac Yankum and Barry Horowitz were part of post-WrestleMania 12 WWF. 7 out of 10.
Okay, it's only a bit of feedback this week for you, 1998, fond,
96.
Nostalgic. What did I say?
98.
Oh, 96, 98. A very big difference. Okay, that puts an end to our look back at WrestleMania 12. We reviewed the Raw going into it, the two Raws coming out of it, and WrestleMania 12 itself. So we've got 3 weeks of shows before WrestleMania 32. So what we are going to be doing next, and many people have suggested this to us, if there's any year to do this particular year, it's got to be 2016. We are hot and heavy into the primary season. Who is going to emerge as the Republican nominee? These are the questions on everyone's mind. And of course, we have to take a look at WWE Hall of Famer Donald Trump and his contributions to one of the most successful WrestleManias of all time, WrestleMania 23, from Ford Field in Detroit, Michigan, which was attended by Dan the Mouth Lovransky.
No way.
So next week, what we are going to do, in similar fashion, we are going to review the episode of Raw going into WrestleMania 23. It was Monday, March the 26th of 2007, featuring the go-home edition of Raw from the Allstate Arena in Chicago, which coincidentally was where this past Monday's Raw took place from.
Great coincidence.
A great coincidence.
Yeah.
But that's about it. So we're going to review that episode of Raw, which featured a very memorable moment on the show. Then in 2 weeks' time, we will review WrestleMania 23, and then we'll cap it off with the night after WrestleMania 23 as we go back to the year 2007. One that you and I can remember like yesterday.
Trying to.
Do you remember what was going on during March of 2007?
We graduated, didn't we?
We were about to graduate, and what I remember about this WrestleMania was A.
Drinking contest.
No, not that. I wouldn't remember that. Was you and I in the midst of practicum insanity.
No.
Finishing that damn thing.
Oh, man.
Where I felt like my head was spinning as we were on the home stretch of our university careers.
Facebook reminded me of that today.
God, you know, I don't need those reminders. I can remember
nine
stuff.
9 years ago today.
9 years ago?
Yeah.
Wow. Amazing how time flies. Mm-hmm. As we embark on our 32nd birthdays, Wei, we're a combined 64. If you put our bits together, we could have put together Nintendo.
Wow.
Back we're both 96.
Sega, yeah, we're both Sega Genesises.
Man, we're just incredible.
Yeah.
Next year, we'll be past the senior citizen age. We'll be 66.
Oh, yes. Sorry, I meant to say, what was the one? Saturn? Sega Saturns. Or Sega Saturns.
Was that 64-bit? I thought 64 was the first 64-bit video game system. You know what I want to go out with? Because we have no other thing to go out with? Let's hear an old N64 commercial.
Sure.
I'm going to dig one up.
It's got very loose ties. It's got no ties, practically.
None.
Until the rest of the show.
Absolutely none.
If you really want to, okay.
I just want to pick things I want to hear. Right. In the moment. So next week, the March 26, 2007 episode of Monday Night Raw. Unfortunately, it's not on the network, so tougher to find. Maybe if you have feedback, great. If not, the two of us, we will steamroll through it. And that will wrap up this week's edition of Review Away. We will speak with you in 2007.
Know how to use one of these?
And see how it feels when 007 meets N64 before Bond returns in his new movie Tomorrow Never Dies. Nintendo 64, the fastest, most powerful games console on Earth.